This is Will's Band of the Week for April 8th, 2010. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will.
This is Barrett.
And this is Chris.
And he was kind of sheepish about that, but he's got his own microphone. Maybe he's...
I know, I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I think maybe he's just a little bit shy. You know how Chris gets sometimes.
Right.
And but we've got an upgrade to the studio. We've got three microphones, so you won't hear... Well, maybe you didn't hear it much before, but we were passing around a microphone a lot. And so now it's just going to be a real flow, I think, to the podcast.
Right. Right. I can start yelling at Barrett.
I think that, yeah, the passing the microphone sometimes got in the way of spontaneity.
Yeah, I think so.
And, you know, you'd kind of think about something that you want to say, but you didn't have the microphone. And then when you got it, the time had passed.
Yeah. Timing is a big thing.
Timing is important, yeah.
Let's tell people that if they'd like to contact us, they can send an email to willsband@yahoo.com. They can go to the website, willsband.net, or they can go to the Facebook page, which is called the Will's Band of the Week podcast. Is that right?
Indeed.
And what are we up to now? Is it 66 fans?
It was 66.
Wow.
You know, and then on Facebook, when, you know, it only shows six at a time, so it's set on there, six of 66, which I thought was kind of freaky.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sign of the beast. And that's really what this podcast is all about.
Yeah, it is.
It's paying homage to the man downstairs.
Really?
Yeah.
I was just talking about music. You guys did do that Wolf Mother podcast when I was gone.
Yeah, we did.
Was that when, were you guys doing some weird, witchy, satanic things
We had Anton LaVey on as a special guest that time.
I don't know who that is, but
he's the grand wizard priest of... Wait, wizard is KKK. What's like the grand dragon of the satanic...
So he's a bad guy. He's
bad like guy. I was going to say, though, that the messages actually in that podcast, they were subliminal. So, you know, we didn't really come right out with them, but they're sort of planted in there in a way that, you know, we wanted it to be a really subtle effect.
You really have to you have to play the podcast backwards to get the real meaning.
Right. So if you've got the software, you know, it's probably worth your time to make that effort so you can hear those messages.
Oh, hey, guess what? Barrett and I went to a concert.
Yeah, we went and saw Camera Obscura on Sunday.
We certainly did.
Mm-hmm. I forgot to ask you guys. I was going to ask you if you went. So tell me what I missed. I was on vacation, by the way. I would have gone.
Yeah. We came back, my family and I, from a trip to my mom's in Detroit. Drove straight.
D-Town.
I was in the D for the weekend.
Your mom's hardcore.
Yep. And drove straight to the High Noon and met Chris and his neighbor, Afra. And just in time for the headliner to go on. And it was good because Tracy Ann Campbell, the singer and the songwriter and everything, is she's fantastic. I mean, I could just sit there and listen to her for a long time. I thought the band was, they didn't seem overly enthusiastic to be there. The bass player looked like he'd rather have been pretty much anywhere else.
That's kind of the impression I got too.
Yeah, and Tracy Ann was like, you know,
you got the whole vibe that this is kind of the end of a long tour, and
right,
they would much rather be doing anything else than
right.
But yeah, I mean, the songs are great, and she's great. She's, you know, screwed up a couple times.
Right. One thing, the one criticism, they play their songs so straight off the record. There's nothing new. There's nothing added. Did you feel that same way?
Yeah, well, the thing is that some of their songs are just so orchestral, and they're so, I mean, so heavy on the violins, which I love. I mean, I'm a sucker for the violin, but they don't have a violinist on tour with them. So, you know, just the fullness, the richness of the sound isn't necessarily there. They've got a trumpet player, and they've got a woman playing the organ, and you can't even hear it. I mean, you couldn't even really hear the organ unless you know, it opens a song or anything. So,
right.
So, you know, a lot of the songs may have sounded a little flatter than they normally would have. But, you know, that's a minor complaint.
I think their violin player OD'd in Berlin on a tour. Chris is looking.
And was never seen again.
No, I don't know. Maybe they just hired session musicians for the violin parts and string parts. I don't know.
Now, I read that the opening band was Princeton. Did you guys see them?
He did, and I didn't.
I saw Princeton, and you know what? They were very good.
I saw them. They were here in Madison for that Forward Music Festival back in September, and I thought they were pretty good. And I got their album, and it's interesting because their album has all kinds of sort of orchestral stuff in it that you don't get when you see them live. It's really different, but it's not too bad.
Yeah, they had the they kind of have like a, you know, buttoned up Vampire Weekend East Coast. I think they're actually from the West Coast, but they kind of have that kind of preppy East Coast kind of feel going. So my main complaint with the whole concert though is the doing away with the smoking ban, or the smoking ban that they implemented in Madison where nobody can smoke, because you're at these concerts and people stink. And when people could smoke,
they only
at least
like
you
smoke
smell
then?
Like smoke. But then when you're crammed in there with so many people, and you know, you got people, you know, flatulating. I don't know what I'm allowed to say on this podcast. You got people that smell like dirty hippies. It's just terrible.
Now, there's a perspective on the smoking ban I hadn't heard before.
Yeah, people at concerts stink. And I'd much rather smell cigarette smoke than smell actual people.
Well, I bet depending on the type of band, you get sort of a different prevailing body odor, though. You know?
Yeah, I'd imagine that Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros concert must have been like a barnyard.
Yes.
I think. I also want to comment that I think that, you know, as I'd said, I'd been on an 8-hour drive from the D straight there. I think these are indirect criticisms of me.
So you're a little ripe yourself.
I was maybe stinky.
We got split up a little bit.
Yeah, there was a guy. We were all kind of standing around. Afra went a little more in front than I was comfortable doing. To follow her would have been standing right in front of some shorter women. So we were kind of apart. And then, but there was a couple, like a guy behind his girlfriend. So they were like one unit the whole time. And you couldn't.
He had the death grip on her.
Yeah, you couldn't.
And he kept bumping into me.
Yeah. There was no way to, you know, it was almost like they were trying to keep us separated. And it was,
right before the show started, I cracked a joke, and you could see all of Camera Obscura walk into the back room, and I leaned over and I said, "Band meeting," from Flight of the Conchords, which you're not a Flight of the Conchords guy, are you?
Well, I don't have expensive cable packages.
Right. Well, I get the DVDs, so so that's kind of an inside joke on that show where they call a band meeting, and the girl in the death grip of the guy started laughing, and I'm like, "Ooh, beat you, sucker!"
Yeah, you were.
See, when you said that and you were laughing about it, I was kind of going along like I thought it was just funny, but I wasn't sure why. Yeah. Like, band meeting.
Yeah,
yep, that's what that was. Why is everybody laughing? Man.
Well, when I was in Southern Florida, I actually heard more alternative rock over sound systems than I ever would have guessed. Couple songs came on. I'm not going to even remember what they were, but I remember thinking, this is weird that I'm hearing this in this random place down in Florida. But one thing I do remember, which is very topical to the podcast, we were at a restaurant in Coral Gables, which is sort of a suburb of Miami, and suddenly, over the sound system comes the terrible cover of Blue Monday by, is it Orgy?
The band Orgy.
Yeah, yes. I'm like, wow. Where is this coming from?
Where is this? Yeah. Like a family restaurant?
Yeah.
Like a Red Lobster?
It was a, no, it was a pizza place, just kind of downtown.
How do I feel?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about a coincidence. Okay, well, there's your music news.
Maybe they were listening to the podcast there.
Yeah.
And decided to play the worst cover song of all time?
Well, we have a greater influence probably than we realize. It spreads, you know? So, want to talk about some music?
Sure. We have a couple of bands on the docket.
We do, and one is a band that you guys are like veteran fans of, and I'm kind of a new fan of, and that's a band called Clem Snide. Now, there's not a guy named Clem Snide, is there? Or is that a character or something?
I think he's a character in a William S. Burroughs
yeah.
book. And I started reading some Burroughs one time and just got bored with it. I don't know. It's like, I don't know.
I believe it's from Naked Lunch.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, so which one of you guys would like
I
to give us...
I read Naked Breakfast, and I couldn't get to the sequel.
You're only halfway through the breakfast, and you were
right.
done. Yeah. So why don't one of you guys give us the Clem Snide overview?
Wow, that's a hard thing to do. Clem Snide. Well, I think the only... You know, it's kind of a revolving cast of people in the band. The main... the songwriter and singer's name is Yves Barzelay. And
wasn't he born the same place as Gene Simmons?
He was born in Haifa, Israel.
That's the only information you get here on the podcast.
Yep. And, you know, he's lived in Brooklyn, and now I think he lives in Nashville. And he's had several, you know, incarnations of the band. And like I said, he's the only permanent member. And I'm not sure when they officially got together, but their first record came out in 2000, so about 10 years ago, and that was called My Favorite, or Your Favorite Music.
Actually, what was the one before that? You Were a Diamond.
You Were a Diamond, right.
So how many do they have? Before that.
I think this is their seventh proper release.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
And you guys have seen them live several times, right?
Probably 15
More than a
times.
Dozen. Yeah.
15
yeah.
Times.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
And so, this is a band that I've heard of just over the years and just never happened to buy anything by them. This new album I really like a lot. So I'll be interested to hear what you guys think about how it compares to the rest of their catalog.
Yeah, everybody has their kind of indie band that allows them to complain about the music industry and like, how is this band not like the biggest band in the world? And, you know, to me, you know, Clem Snide and Yves Barzelay, even on his solo stuff, it's just so great, so brilliant. You know, it's got humor, it's got sarcasm, it's got, you know, he sings love songs every now and then. And I just, you know, whatever he's selling, I'm buying.
They were on Sire Records for a couple of albums.
Yeah, I guess you could say his biggest claim to fame is that he, for one season, they did the theme music for the TV show Ed. When that show first started, they did Next Year by the Foo Fighters was the song. And then the next year, Clem Snide did it. And then I guess the fans were so outraged that they changed it away from the Foo Fighters song that... the next season, they went back to the Foo Fighters. So,
really?
Yeah.
Fans?
There's a fan revolt.
Contact networks about stuff like that?
Yes.
Wow.
That's... Okay.
Well, the new record is called The Meat of Life. Who wants to pick a track?
Well, I'll go ahead and start, if that's all right. I'm going to pick Denver, which is number 5.
I hope that you never forgive me. Forever deny me your smile, 'cause I met this woman in Denver, and now she is carrying my child. Remember that week in the mountains, half naked, we laid in the grass. Between us, a love without question, and all things seemed new. Days spent with you was all I should want from this hope that you never forgive me forever. Deny me your smile, 'cause I met this woman in Denver, and now she is carrying my child.
That keeps alive the streak of songs Barrett picks that I never would pick.
I had that one high on my list.
Yeah,
yeah, nah, it's a that good one song. Is. I think the after you know we faded that out, but after there's a bit of a turn in there that's unexpected.
Right,
where Eve is basically. I mean, you think he's saying, "Oh, I really messed up, and you should never forgive me," but you know, you kind of get an idea that things are he's coming clean and things might be all right. And then he talks about how she's young and she's religious and she's going to need some help and he's going to go out there and be with her. And I think it's pretty powerful song. Guy's a real ass. Hard to, right? It's a nice song and he's asking not to be forgiven. And I think she should oblige him on that.
Yeah. Really tells a story.
I also, one of the other reasons I picked it is, pretty much any Clem Snide album that comes out, we've seen them so many times that there's always a couple of songs on there that you're like, oh yeah, I've heard that a few times. With concert. So that's the only one on this album that I recognized from seeing in concert. Hearing and seeing.
One of their last albums that came out, let's see, it wasn't the last one, but the one before that, The End of Love. I think when it came out, I had heard every song on it, either in concert or you know on a single or something like that. So it's kind of hard for me to judge it. Just, you know, it's not like a new album showing up and you get every song fresh and clean. And I mean, when you've heard acoustic versions that you actually like better than what ends up on the album and stuff, it's
right.
It's a little different, a little harder to judge it. So, all right, who's up next?
Well, I'd like to hear Will's perspective as the newer fan. What are your impressions? And if you want to pick out a song.
Well, I think there's kind of a depth to the songwriting, and I just like the whole feel of it. It's really got a mood to it, and I sort of like the way it's recorded. It's got sort of a warmth. You know, there's a little bit of reverb there, and there's kind of a, I don't know how else to describe it. I just like the sound, and the songwriting is good, and the whole thing just has a great feel to it. My pick is track 4, called I Got High. I think this is a great song.
I got high off John Stevens fan in Normal, Illinois. This song goes out to all you beautiful American girls and boys. Strange colored shots between the beers. The earth is flat, at least round here. Credit tax, not faith, but fear. We'll see us through as we mow the grass off interstates. Go slow, not fast. Golden Gates, there is no past, but hearts still ache for that first kiss, for that first kiss. I got eyes of John Stevens fan in Normal, Illinois, and this song goes out to all you beautiful American girls and boys. And this song goes out to all you beautiful American girls and boys. With hearts too young to euthanize, and hungry, pounding, bloodshot. moving carts go floating past. Branches scraping against the glass. The robots hustling quickly staff to make it last. To make it last.
Great megaphone effect there too.
Yeah, he has some kind of thing with censored porn. That's the second song that he mentions that he. There's a song called "The Sound of German Hip Hop" that I believe has the term censored porn in it. It's something. So
interesting.
Yeah. So maybe that's representative of something that's a little less than good or not as good as it should be.
Might it be equally interesting that Chris picked that out of two songs out of a couple hundred that he's recorded?
Yep.
All the porn I've been in has not been censored. I can guarantee you that. You go to any hotel in the Bible Belt. And now, also, you'll notice in that song he name checks Sufjan Stevens,
right,
and mispronounces it Sufjan.
Right.
I think intentionally.
Yeah, I think it is. But I don't... And he has a kind of... He'll drop in like a pop culture reference every now and then. Like there's a song where he talks about the song Pink Houses, the John Mellencamp song. There's a song, The Junkie Jews, where he talks about Corey Feldman.
Right.
I was trying to think... Every album has a couple of those sprinkled in there, so it's... just a little thing he does.
All right, Chris, the floor is yours.
Ooh, I get to pick a song. Let's go with... I really like the vibe on number 11 with Nothing to Show for It.
Let's hold in our breath. Never to let go of it. 'Cause it seems we've made a mess. Nothing much to show of it. And your plants could use a drink to help them with their growing. That time I bathed you in the sink. It's like your skin was glowing. The pillows tight between our legs. The pleasure I'm discovered. So if you stay away, I promise you a nickel.
And that's why I think I like this more than the last couple that have come out, because I think he's really returned more to using strings, which he did on a lot of his early albums, which I naturally really like.
It's another good one. I think we're 3 for 3.
I think, was it about 2 or 3 weeks ago that we did the podcast on Helligoats? And Will was saying that, you know, he's kind of listening to those two bands, Helligoats and Clem Snide, at the same time. And, had a hard time keeping them, you know, separate in his mind, because they do sound quite a bit alike.
Yeah, they're essentially like brother bands now.
Right.
Now the fact that they're touring and everything, and we're going to go see them in May, I believe they're going to be here, right?
I think so. Yep. Do we have a bonus track? Somebody want to? We should play one more, I think.
I would like to hear the song Denise, which is song number two, I believe.
Okay, here we go.
I was at home on Saturday just kind of checking Facebook, and Yves Barsley put a video of himself on there of like Christmas lights wrapped around his head, and it's a 7-minute video of him lip syncing along to one of his songs. So I'm thinking there's an outside chance he might be losing his mind. It's not an impossibility.
I'll have to see that. I did not notice that.
Yeah, it's a treat.
How do you know he's lip syncing? Because there's music going on.
Yeah, the song is playing behind him, but then you can hear his voice like yelling into the camera. It's really kind of bizarre. It's very avant-garde.
Mm.
Well, I think we're all giving this one a thumbs up, aren't we?
We are.
I definitely am.
I'll give it an enthusiastic thumbs up.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where I've listened to it so much, it's kind of hard to gauge what I thought about it like right when I was in that sweet spot.
Right.
Because now I hear it and it's like, you know, I can listen to it, but I can't really hear it anymore. Is this too deep?
Chris is a Zen master, I think. He's like, he no longer hears it. Now he is the music.
Right.
It's created pathways in your brain.
I've really become this album now. It's become a part of me, much as my right arm is a part of me.
Wow.
Okay, well,
one
there
right
you go.
Arm up. I'm giving it a thumbs up. Chris gives it his whole...
the whole body up.
Right. That's good.
But there has to be some kind of chemical reaction that happens in your body where an album actually becomes part of you, right? Where it gets like kind of saved on your hard drive.
Yeah, it gets lodged in there, yeah.
So it actually literally becomes part of you. Anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. Will, do you have an album like that in your life?
Yeah, I might, but can't think of it right now.
For me, it's the first Specials album, which I got when I was like 17.
Wow.
And I know that so well, and no matter what mood I'm in, it always makes me happy, and it is so familiar, and I can anticipate every drum beat, every bass note, every vocal inflection, and it's like my right arm and my left hand.
I think maybe the closest thing to an album that just like totally I was absorbed by was probably the first U2 album called Boy.
Yeah.
When I was about 19, I mean, it was just totally, I just had never like fallen for an album like that ever before.
Yeah, I think Electrico is still my favorite U2 song. That song is just awesome.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff on that album.
Any of the REMs from the 80s, and then like the Beastie Boys, yeah. Paul's Boutique.
That's a good one.
Every note of every song, just perfect.
Yeah, I'll add Reckoning to that.
I'm going with Murmur if we're going to talk REM albums. But this could get Chris going for half an hour.
What aspect would you like to talk about?
You know,
well,
that
you brought it up, but I think, you know, I mean, when Green came out, it was 89, and they'd moved over to Warner, and I'm like, I am ready to not like this, because I thought their last two IRS albums were, you know, kind of hit and miss, and so I didn't like Green, but going back, it's good. I mean, there's Pop Song 89 is on there, but other than that, that song is even okay in, like, kind of a nostalgic way. It's good. Better than it needed to be.
I think we may even have discussed this, but Document seemed to be the one that kind of propelled them into the area where they could sign a major label deal. And I don't really like Document all that much. I mean, it's got The One I Love, and
yeah,
It's the End of the World as We Know It on it. But you know, I don't know. It gets kind of surreal near the end,
right?
Disturbance at the Heron House and those kind of songs.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, I'm impressed that you can remember those titles. They sort of sound familiar when you mention them, but, well, I remember Pop Song 89, but...
Odd Fellows Local
151.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, we have another band. We and it's not really
It's not REM either.
It's a guy. It's a guy we talked about before, and you guys said he wasn't nice. So we'll see if we're nice to his music. This is the new one by Josh Rouse, who... he was from somewhere in the United States. I forgot where. And then he moved to Spain.
I think he's from Omaha.
Yeah, I think you're right, originally.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think he may even have lived in Nashville at some point.
Probably.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's got the album called Nashville, and it essentially ended up being a kiss-off to Nashville about, you know, see you later, Nashville. I don't like you anymore.
Right.
And so he's moved to Spain, and his latest album is called El Turista. I'm going to guess that means... The Tourist.
That is correct.
See, I don't know much Spanish, but I can guess sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes there's a word for that, you know, like hamburguesa. Guess what that means? That means hamburger.
Actually,
they were looking at me with, like, throwing up their arms, like, what?
Actually, it would be hamburguesa.
Okay.
Would it not?
That's true.
Like, you're the one, like, that lectured us on horchata.
Horchata. Horchata without right. The H.
That's right.
Hamburguesa.
Yeah, you're all mad that Vampire Weekend called the song horchata.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Chris was originally the one who told us that we should listen to this. So let's have Chris pick the first track.
All right. I'm going with Lemon Tree.
You stole my track, Chris.
Bam, sucka.
But that's okay, because it's good. This is track 3, Lemon Tree.
Down in a valley where the grass is growing tall and green, I eat the berries and I sleep in the dandelion field. And all those pretty, pretty things. It's a long walk home, but I found my bee. It's a long walk.
I really like that track. I don't know if it's really representative of the album, though. It's the most overtly poppy sort of 60s influenced track on the album.
That's the best song he's done in a while, I think. You know, I didn't... I think this is the first studio album he's had since the one that it's called like Country House City Mouse or some combination of the words house, mouse, country, and city. And that one was not good at all.
Which, of course, rhymes with Rouse, which Rouse, is his last name.
Right. I didn't
Country
even think
House
of that.
City Mouse by Josh Rouse.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I didn't think of that.
That song is not a part of my body, by the way, or that album.
No, that's good, because it would be a part that you'd want to get amputated, because it's not any good.
Wow, I'd need a Josh Rouse-ectomy?
Yeah, that's right. I don't like that album at all. I guess we're kind of segueing into a brief history of Josh Rouse, but his first one came out in 99, and that was called Dressed Up Like Nebraska. And I've talked on the podcast about not getting a lot of music in the 90s. You know, I did get a lot of things, but they weren't always... I didn't get as much new things as I do now. But on the same weekend, I bought Cat Power's Moon Picks and Josh Rouse's Dressed Up Like Nebraska and Scott Walker's Greatest Hits, which was like kind of a transformative weekend for me. Three awesome records in one weekend. It's kind of a special thing. But so that album was really great. Just kind of like heartland pop rock singer songwriter songs. Right? The yes. Fair assessment?
Yes.
And he did another one, Under the Cold Blue Stars, in a similar vein, but there was maybe a little bit more, a little slicker.
The album Home, I believe, was next.
Okay, Home, and then.
Yes.
Okay, and those were all sort of a piece. They fit together. And then he did like 1972 and Nashville, and things got kind of themey. Like 1972, he wanted the songs to sound like they were produced in 1972, which is the year that he was born. And that got great reviews, but it's kind of gimmicky. And then Nashville, same thing. And then I think that's when he moved to Spain, and he put out, this one is El Turista, and he had another one with a Spanish title, El Baracho, maybe.
No, he did, it's funny, it's like music talk with people who can't remember anything. What was it called? It was called,
It doesn't really matter. But by that time he was on his, on the downward slope of his career, and I don't know that this album... maybe he's bouncing along the bottom now, and this is one of the better ones that he's had in the last 5 years. But, you know, say six, seven, eight years ago, he was a press darling, and I don't know of anybody besides, say, another example would be Badly Drawn Boy that's fallen as far, as fast as Josh Rouse has.
Well, it's like, interesting that we've got kind of a pattern going here, because you guys have all this history of Josh Rouse, and this is another guy that I've heard of, but I didn't have any of his albums. And so hearing this one was just kind of fresh. So I kind of only know the Spanish Josh Rouse now.
Maybe we should pick one of the Spanish language songs.
Right. There are three or four, aren't there?
Yep. Number two is a good example.
VH1 doesn't even need to make it like Behind the Music of Josh Rouse. You just gave it all to us right there.
That's right. So how do you pronounce this, Barrett?
Let me take a look at it.
Yes, Mr. Spanish
speaking. Duerme, which means hurt. You hurt me.
Okay.
To duerme means you hurt me. Duerme means like, yeah, whatever. Guy's hurt.
Okay. This is track two, Duerme.
Está en el campo, ahora vuelve.
pretty good sound when you're sitting by the pool on vacation.
Right. You know what this album is good for? I think, like, my wife really likes it. And my, you know, I'll play music, and usually she's like, yeah, you know, it's all right, it's fine.
Please but don't tell us it's good for, like, getting her in the mood.
And I did tell you that. It's good for, like, getting up in the morning and making, like, an apple puff pancake on a Saturday morning. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
I'd say so. But this is an album that I think women that, like, you know, maybe they'll, if they're going to listen to something, they'll put on NPR. But if classical comes on, maybe they'd say, I think I'll listen to some Sarah Vaughan. If you have a wife like that likes also some rock music, this is the kind of thing for her.
And nobody is more in touch with the needs of the women of America than
at least the one, at least the one that I'm married to. I'm very in touch with what she needs music wise.
That's good to know.
Well, I had never considered making apple pancakes before, but now I'm going to go ahead and do that.
Yeah, you need a cast iron skillet. Okay. You need 2 tablespoons of butter. I won't go into this, but off the air, maybe this can be something I'll put on the website.
Like like bonus web content.
Yeah. Apple pop pancake. It's a finished thing. Eggs. Well,
and then you top it off with the El Turista album by Josh Rouse.
Yeah, you can put that on while you're making it.
Right.
Uh huh.
Yep. And then
does that flavor the pancake in any way? Just the melodies.
Well, it might inspire you to. You know, like maybe I'm gonna chop up a little.
This is
cilantro.
Like,
and put
this,
it
this is like a movie that has not yet been made that we need to. There are
plenty
of movies.
It's like Chocolat, except it's called Puff Pancake.
Right. Like water for chocolate. This is like pancake
puff for pancakes.
So okay.
People start eating your pancakes and suddenly they're like fall in love.
I'm going to take us back to the English language, but I want you guys to help me here. Should I pick Sweet Elaine or Cotton Eye Joe? Those are my next two that I liked quite a bit.
Let's pick, I don't know, I'll vote for Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah, it's a good slow jam.
All right, yeah, this is a good one.
This one's for lovers and pancakes.
Where do you come from? Where do you go? What you been doing? Oh, Cotton Eye Joe. Well, I come to see you, and I come for the break. And I come for to show you the new song that I sing.
Not really a pancake song, in my mind. More of, I think, more of a crepe, maybe.
Definitely,
yeah,
because it's flat. Heyo, no, that's a good song. I did like that one.
I think in kind of in the same way that Chris goes for violins, I like a really well orchestrated piano in a pop song, and I think that's got a really cool kind of jazzy piano.
Yeah. Now, is that a remake of the song, the dance song, Cotton Eye Joe?
I'm not familiar with that dance song.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from? Cotton Eye Joe.
I mean, that's like an old folk song, right?
No, well, if you've been to any dance club within the last 20 years.
I think it was 21 years ago that I was last at a dance club.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Since you've been home making pancakes.
Is that a dance club?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a dance song, Cotton Eye Joe, and I believe this may be like some kind of clever reworking of that song. So, or maybe it is a traditional song that he skipped over the dance version of the song and just went right to his own.
Well, in any event,
yeah, I don't know.
I think it's good. This is an album that I've had for probably like 2 months. And, you know, I had just been getting so much new music, I hadn't really gotten around to listening to it till we decided to do it for the podcast. And I like it quite a bit. I think, you know, I don't have this whole history with him. So just starting with this one, I think it's pretty good. And I don't very often listen to music with a Spanish influence or sung in Spanish. So even though...
Other than Gerardo.
Other than that, right?
Rico.
But it's,
suave.
It's interesting because there are a lot of different styles on this album. You know, those moody Spanish songs that remind me of sitting by the pool.
With Ricky Martin.
Right. And then you've got the, you know, the poppy song that we played first, Lemon Tree. And I don't know, it's kind of all over the place, but pretty good, I think.
No, I agree. And I think what I said about women liking it is... I don't know if your wife has heard this while you were
I don't think
previewing
she's
it.
Heard it. No, I don't think she's heard it. So.
You know, she's not exactly the same as my wife as far as musical taste. From what you've described, her liking and disliking, they might not always agree on things. And
mm-hmm.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, she was 50-50 on it.
50-50?
She declares anything that I listen to hippie music.
Hippie music.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So I think this...
What
for
about like hot chip? It's the hippie music?
Yeah, hippie techno. Yeah, she's like Mr. Burns.
What does Mr. Burns listen to?
I don't know, but everything's damn hippie
music.
What
would he listen to?
Okay.
He'd listen to like the Andrews Sisters, maybe.
But this brings me back to something that Barrett mentioned before, where he went out and he bought three albums... on the same day, and they all ended up being like transformative albums for you. And my back when I actually walked into stores and bought albums, which seems like eons ago now, I always limited it to like no more than two, because if I bought more than that, there would always be one that didn't get listened to.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be like a topic for another podcast, like the best albums that you bought that never got listened to because you bought a better one on the same day.
I don't think I could remember. You guys have a better memory, you know, for when you actually bought an album.
Can you guys look at your... Well, it's different now because you're looking at a screen. Like, remember where you got that?
Right.
And Will is like, yeah, I got that one on Amy Street.
Right.
You know?
For $2.38.
Right. I remember 2 months ago, like it was yesterday, when I clicked the button... And it became streaming down to my computer.
Right.
And I was sitting there, and that little bar was moving over to the right. And I was
right.
Like, come to Papa.
Yep.
I'm going to listen to
yeah.
I'm gonna listen to you all night.
But I can look at my old records, like LPs, and remember buying a lot of them and where it was.
I can sometimes remember where I was listening to something. I can picture myself like in a particular parking lot. When I had a song on,
yeah,
where it just made an impression on me because I was just right there when it kind of entrenched my brain.
Yeah, and the problem now isn't necessarily, you know, finding good albums. The problem now is finding time to listen to all the albums that are available because you can get so many online so easily and, you know, prioritizing and knowing what to listen to, which is really the whole purpose of this podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll take the guesswork out of it.
Yeah,
you
listen
people.
To us, and it's solid gold.
Yep, absolutely. So we've got two for you that you can use for sort of different purposes.
One for making pancakes.
Right, and the other for just listening, right?
Right. The other one, yeah, what is the mood for Clem Snide?
kind of a general purpose thing.
General purpose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a jack of all trades album.
Yeah.
All right. That's all we've got. Ready to say goodnight? Any closing remarks?
I want to make a remark about... Maybe this is better saved for another day. But I don't know if you guys have a song that's like the favorite song that you don't own. And you hear it once in a while, and you're like, no way, I love that song. And I'm not talking about like some Journey song that's hilarious. I mean a song that you really love that you don't own. And I have one. Mine is by the Left Banke, Walk Away, Renee. Just love that song.
Oh, yeah.
And it was for, you know, it's not like I was killing myself trying to find it, but it wasn't available on iTunes. I just wanted to buy that, and all their albums were out of print. And finally, they got it on iTunes, and I saw it there, and I'm like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to get it. I like that I just hear it once in a while, and it'll be some place, and you're like, no way. Oh, my God.
And it's sort of elusive.
Right.
Still.
It's elusive. It's like my... You know, I am Ahab, and that song is the Great White Whale. And I could go to the fish market and buy the whale, but that's not as satisfying. So I'm not going to get it.
There was an album that came out, I believe it was like 1983, by the band UTFO, which was like kind of a rap, like R&B band. And I had it, and I listened to it to death when I was probably like 12 years old. And for the life of me, it's out of print, and you can't find it anywhere. I've even like scoured the internet looking for this album, and it doesn't exist anywhere. And I would love to hear it again.
Nobody even bothered to make digital files and put them up on a blog or something.
No, it's not even, yeah. It wasn't even worth it, but I knew like every word of every song when it
came
out.
I mean, if you Google it, is there some information about it?
The album is a UTFO and it's called Skeezer Pleaser.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So if anybody knows of where I can get a copy of UTFO's Skeezer Pleaser, you let me know.
I think we were talking a little bit before we started recording about, guilty pleasures, you know, and everybody's got their guilty pleasures. There was a band back in the late 70s that I got the album for 50 cents in the cutout bin, and it turned out to be just this fantastic entertainment value for me and a group of friends of mine. It was this band called The Gods, spelled with a Z, and they were like this kind of boogie-woogie metal band. Do either of you guys hear them?
You shared that song with us.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah. You talked about it.
They had just some unbelievable sort of unintentional comedy. It was just, I never spent a better 50 cents in my life. All right, maybe we can discuss The Gods in a later podcast. So that's it. I think we're out of time. I mean, not that we're really ever out of time, because we can do whatever we want, but...
out of time,
yeah, we're gonna,
I think.
We're going to declare ourselves out of time, and... And that'll be it. We'll be back next week, I think, won't we? We're a little delayed this week, so we'll have to see what we can come up with for next week.
We got to go start swapping recipes.
That's right. And so we'll talk to you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.